there is to it.
Yep.
Good morning. It's time to read the Mason City Globe Gazette for today. And today is Tuesday, December the 10th, 2019. I'm Mary Jane, and my partner at the microphone for the next hour is Judy. We are pleased to be with you. This broadcast is made possible through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. That's why we're called IRIS, I-R-R-I? Yes, Iowa Radio Reading Information Service. Now here are today's headlines on the front page of the Globe Gazette. The Bulls players, fans enjoy historic last game at the barn. And the Texas Tenors are returning to Mason City. Operation Christmas Meal to provide food for Iowans in need. And 'tis the season for flu shots. And how does Mason City determine snow days? Candidates target undecided Iowans. Okay. And today's weather, I've got to find the right page here. Okay. Today's weather. Well, today it's mostly sunny and colder. There's wind from 12 to 25 miles an hour. And it's going to be 8 degrees during the day. And a bit of snow late, it'll be frigid. There'll be wind, and it'll be, the wind will be from 7 to 14 miles an hour. And we're going to get down to zero. Tomorrow is going to be partly sunny, but it's going to be cold. But, that sun is wonderful, isn't it? Now, with the first story, here's my partner, Judy.
How does Mason City determine snow days? With snow flurrying in the air and days getting colder, students are holding their breath for the school district to call snow days every time they see a snowstorm on the weather forecast. Mason City Community School District Superintendent Dave Versteeg said it's a difficult decision to call a snow day because there's a lot of judgment and predicting involved in the decision. Nobody knows for sure what's going to happen, so I think being cautious is a good way to do it, he said. In the end, if you don't know what to do, just be cautious and err on the side of being cautious and keeping people safe. The superintendent makes that final decision on whether or not to call a snow day. And Versteeg said it's a collaborative decision that takes in many factors, especially transportation. Versteeg said the main person he talks to is the Supervisor of Transportation and Grounds, Randy Meyer, who goes out early to check road conditions and talk them over with other school districts and the bus company. A lot of it is predicting, Versteeg said. We often have to make that decision well before the buses go out or well before school starts, so sometimes it's a bit of guesswork. Just predicting what it's going to be when school starts. The Mason City CSD tries to make the decision no later than 6 a.m. The earlier the better, he said. There's just a lot of timing things we have to consider. Last year, the district didn't only have snowstorms to consider, they also had to be aware of cold weather, and as a result, they had called a total of 10 snow days, half of which were for the cold. We canceled school because it was too cold to be outside, Versteeg said. The main thing to think about when calling a snow day is the danger to people being outside and on roads and whether the district should take the risk or not. There's no perfect day, Versteeg said. We have people in accidents and have bad things happen every day, but we don't want to put our kids and our employees in any unnecessary risks. So that's what really ultimately makes the decision of not having, just a minute, got to turn the page here. There we go. Not having school or having a late start or something like that. At the same time, though, a district can't just call a school off for just a little bit of snow on the ground, he said. It's just normal winter driving in Iowa, and we all got to get used to that and realize we have to deal with it, Versteeg said.
Well, snow days technically are not built into the year, though school districts often say they have a few built-in, because in Iowa, school districts now count instructional hours, not days, Versteeg said. The minimum is 1,080 instructional hours to make a complete school year in Iowa, or about 154 days, with roughly 7-hour school days. If you have more than 1,080 instructional hours, that's sort of like building in time, that you can just go to the minimum, Versteeg said. That's our approach. Mason City CSD has about 5 additional days of hours in its school calendar. So if things like the weather get bad enough, the district can free up or forgive 5 missed days. So that's what that means. CSD means
Community
missed days,
school
I
district.
Guess. However, this year's number of extra days is less than last year's 10 extra days of instructional hours. This is because of the calendar change that moved the teachers' professional learning time from Tuesday mornings to Wednesday afternoons, taking more time out of the day and leaving less available instructional hours. Well, sometimes the district won't call off a whole snow day, depending on when the storm or harsh weather hits. The district might just call for a late start or an early dismissal, Versteeg said. For the district to call a late start, the storm has to have already hit, and the city or county just needs time to clean up and clear the roads so that they have to wait for a storm to pass by before school can start. Another strategy that some school districts use is to call a late start to buy themselves a couple more hours to decide whether it should be a whole day off or just a partial day. Though Versteeg said he doesn't like to use that. We rarely go late because it's usually not going to be the right thing to do for kids who are going to be left at home anyway. We might as well just try to have school then if we can. And if we can't, then maybe we just shouldn't have school, he said. Trying to get students home before a storm hits is another concern for the district, especially if the storm was certain to happen around the time students are leaving school. We wouldn't want to necessarily do it in the middle of a storm, but if the storm was going to be relatively certain to happen at 5, we'd probably be okay to send people home at a normal time. Our buses have pretty much everybody delivered by 5 o'clock. But if it's going to be a 2 event, well then, perhaps we better go home at noon to make sure everybody's where they need to be before the storm hits. Versteeg said he doesn't worry about the possibility of having to add school days at the end of the year because keeping the students safe is his priority. I think keeping kids safe and keeping everybody safe is our number one goal. And if that means adding days on at the end of the year, so be it, he said. That's fine. There's no sense taking risks when it's so bad out. When we know in June it's going to be a nice day, and it'll be a good day to have school. So far, Mason City CSD has not called a snow day this year, but it's early.
'Tis the season for flu shots. 'Tis the season for holiday gatherings, shopping, and additional time indoors due to cold, snowy weather. And with those come more exposure to germs, possibly influenza-related ones, local health officials say. Whether you're staying here in Iowa or traveling to other parts of the U.S., the flu is bound to get to us, and it's important to get protected, said Jennifer Stiles, Sarogordo County Public Health. Acute infections, diseases, epidemiology, and preparedness assistant manager. The U.S. winter flu season is off to its earliest start in more than 15 years. An early barrage of illness in the South has begun to spread more broadly, and there's a decent chance flu season could peak much earlier than normal, health officials say. The last flu season to rev up this early was in 2003-2004, a bad one, and some experts think the early start may mean a lot of suffering is in store, but others say it's too early to tell. It really depends on what viruses are circulating, said Scott Epperson, who tracks flu-like illnesses for the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. There's not a predictable trend as far as if it's early, it's going to be more severe, or later, less severe. The Iowa Department of Public Health's most recent influenza-like illness and other respiratory viruses weekly activity report showed the state's flu status had local geographic spread with 62 influenza-associated hospitalizations, one long-term care outbreak investigation, and 14 schools reporting more than 10% of absences due to any illness from September 29th through November 30th. The report states influenza activity remains low in Iowa, but it has been increasing in recent weeks. Cerro Gordo County hasn't had a confirmed case of influenza yet this season, Stiles said. Influenza is a viral infection that attacks the respiratory system, including the nose, throat, and lungs. It's commonly called the flu, but it's not the same as the stomach flu viruses that cause diarrhea and vomiting. The symptoms of the flu can include a sore throat, cough, fever, headache, tiredness, nasal congestion, and body aches. The illness usually lasts 2 to 7 days, and often puts healthy people in bed for days, the CDC says.
Well, most cases are mild, but influenza can be serious and even fatal, especially among infants, pregnant women, people 65 and older, and those with chronic diseases like asthma and diabetic. In November, the Iowa Department of Public Health announced two women, both older than 60, died with flu symptoms, marking the state's first flu-related deaths of the season. Health officials, including those in Cerro Gordo County, say the best way individuals can protect themselves and others against influenza is to get that vaccination. It's recommended that everyone age 6 months and older get a flu vaccine. It takes up to 2 weeks after vaccination for the body to achieve full benefit against the flu virus. Stiles said the number of individuals coming to public health to get vaccinated is tapered, but she expects to see an uptick when an influenza case has been confirmed in Cerro Gordo County. We continue to give them regularly, she said. October is a really busy time, but we're still giving some this morning. Health officials tend to consider a flu season to be officially underway when, for at least 3 weeks in a row, a significant percentage of U.S. doctors' offices visits are due to flu-like illnesses. That's now happened, CDC officials said last week. The agency on Friday estimated that there have already been 1.7 million flu illnesses, 16,000 hospitalizations, and 900 flu-related deaths nationally. My goodness, 900. The most intense patient traffic has been occurring in the six states stretching from Texas to Georgia, but in new numbers released Friday, CDC officials said the number of states with intense activity rose last week to 12. Flu is widespread in 16 states, though not necessarily at intense levels in each, the CDC said. You know, the CDC is CGC. I don't know what it means, right? Cerro Gordo County, I don't know. Last flu season started off as a mild one, but turned out to be the longest in 10 years. It ended with around 49,000 flu-related deaths and 590,000 hospitalizations, according to preliminary estimates. It was bad, but not as bad as the one before it, when flu caused an estimated 61,000 deaths and 810,000 hospitalizations. Those 2017-2018 estimates are new. The CDC last month revised them down from previous estimates as more data, including actual death certificates, came in. In both of the previous two flu seasons, the flu vaccine performed poorly against the nasty predominant virus. It's too early to say how well the vaccine is performing right now, Epperson said. Epperson said there's a chance the flu season will peak this month, which would be unusually early. Flu season usually doesn't hit fever pitch until around February. Well, the flu vaccine can be supplemented with hand washing and staying home from work, school, or other public activities when experiencing flu-like symptoms, Stiles said. It's the best thing to do, she said. It's important to stay home when running a fever or feeling cruddy because it can spread. Flu vaccines are available at CG Public Health. That location is at 2075 4th Street Southwest in Mason City from 10 a.m. to noon, with 12:30 to 4 o'clock Monday through Friday without an appointment. I wonder if that's at the Chelsea Creek. Could be. Stiles said public health accepts most major health insurance, but for those without insurance, the vaccine is $35 for adults and free for children. For questions about influenza vaccines or the virus, call CG Public Health at 641-421-9300 or visit www.cghealth.com.
Candidates target undecided Iowans. In less than 2 months, Iowa Democrats will weigh in on which candidate should represent their party in the 2020 presidential election. A pack of frontrunners has emerged in polling. Pete Buttigieg, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Joe Biden lead the field by a significant margin in Real Clear Politics, rolling average of Iowa polls as of Sunday. Amy Klobuchar has been rising in recent polls, but remains well behind the lead group. Others, like Tom Steyer and Cory Booker, remain active in Iowa with hopes of catching fire late. But while that polling describes the current state of the race, most Iowa Democrats say they have not yet made up their minds or are willing to have their minds changed. Multiple recent polls on the race in Iowa showed fewer than one in three likely caucus participants are locked into their current choice, while more than half said they may change their mind. And those undecided Iowa Democrats were not difficult to find this past week. "I'm still shopping. This is still the speed dating phase," said Pam Meiser, a 74-year-old Huxley woman who attended a Biden campaign event on the Iowa State University campus in Ames. Said Keith Hudnut, a 72-year-old man from Montezuma who attended a Buttigieg event in Grinnell, "It's still kind of wide open. I have to figure out which one has the better chance of getting Republican President Donald Trump out of office." David Radlosk, who leads the political science department at the University of Delaware, has written a book on the Iowa caucuses and has been following the candidates in Iowa throughout the cycle, said with such a competitive and fluid race, more than just those four frontrunners still have a chance to win or at least fare well in Iowa and campaign organization. "As it always does, we'll play a critical role in the outcome of the February 3rd caucuses. You've got those four bunched up, but any one of them could make a major misstep and there could be openings for somebody," Redlosk said. "We say it all the time, but it's organizing. It's the on-the-ground staff. This is the time. You've got to now really start working and turnout angle."
Okay, Mayor Pete, The South Bend, Indiana mayor has been surging in the polls in Iowa, and his Real Clear Politics average is best in Iowa right now, nearly 6 points ahead of Sanders, and has climbed from 7.5% in mid-September to 24% on Sunday. And Mayor Pete regularly is drawing large crowds at his Iowa events in Iowa City cities, both large 2,000 in Coralville this past week, and 1,000 in Davenport and Mount Vernon, and small 560 in Grinnell, and nearly 400 in Washington. In Grinnell, which is in Palouse County, one of 31 Iowa counties that flipped from Democratic President Barack Obama in 2012 to Trump in 2016, Mayor Pete faced pointed questions from a trio of young Iowans. Two urged him to take more liberal stances on college tuition and climate policy, and a third insinuated Mayor Pete's responses as mayor to the fatal shooting of a black man by South Bend police officer was inadequate. A few demonstrators also came to the event with banners critical of Mayor Pete and his policies, providing further evidence that Mayor Pete has become a true front runner in the race. Now his challenge is showing his campaign has staying power and can stand up to that added scrutiny. It's really important for us to demonstrate that we can stand up to scrutiny, Mayor Pete said. We're talking about the American presidency, so you ought to be able to demonstrate that you can stand up to difficult questions. There are a lot of difficult questions in Grinnell, and they were really important and really good questions, and I'm glad we had the chance to go through them. Bernie Sanders. While Mayor Pete has taken a lead over the fellow front runners in Real Clear Politics polling average, the next three, Sanders, Warren, and Biden, are crammed in a tight pack, separated by only 2 points. The U.S. Senator from Vermont continues to have one of the strongest core of supporters in the field. His challenge is expanding beyond his base to compete with the other front-running candidates. Bernie's the real deal. He's been at this for years and years. People know him. He knows what needs to be done, said Madeline Patty, a 70-year-old woman from New Virginia who attended the Sanders event in Indianola. Elizabeth Warren. The U.S. Senator from Massachusetts took a turn as the polling leader in the race in Iowa throughout much of October, but has since slid while Mayor Pete surged. But Warren still has one, if not the most formidable ground game in Iowa, an asset that likely will make her a major player in the race until the end. Like Sanders, Warren also talks regularly about structural reforms and creating a government and economy that works for all Americans, not just the wealthiest. Our democracy is broken. I get it. Rich people may own more shoes than you do. They may own more cars than you do. They may own more houses than you do. But they are not supposed to own a bigger share of our democracy than you do, Warren said during an event on the University of Iowa campus in Iowa City. We take that on. We fight that fight. We end the influence of money. We disrupt it. We get off our back foot and get on our front foot, and then the whole world changes. Joe Biden, while the former vice president was the polling leader on the race in Iowa until mid-September, while his Real Clear Politics polling average has dived from a high of 28.5 to almost half that, he remains in the lead pack. And some of Biden's strongest allures continue to resonate with many Iowa Democrats, that he is viewed as the party's best hope with general election voters, and that he is the most qualified to tackle the job on the first day. I really feel he's our best chance to win in the general election, and we need to win, said Charlene Harmon, a 67-year-old woman from Ankeny who attended the Biden event in Ames. He has all of the qualities we want as far as a resume goes. Biden this past week completed his No Malarkey bus tour of Iowa, which included 19 events that spanned 8 days in 18 counties. During the trip, the Biden campaign announced the endorsement of John Kerry, the 2004 winner of the Iowa Democratic caucuses, who later served as U.S. Secretary of State in the Obama-Biden administration. The field? Klobuchar, a U.S. senator from Minnesota, has made gains recently in Iowa, both in polls and in efforts to boost her campaign organization. I like Amy Klobuchar, Messer said at the Biden event. I like her approach to every issue she's spoken to. She just seems to have a solid approach. It doesn't seem to be pie-in-the-sky stuff. Tom Steyer, a businessman from California, jumped into the race only recently, but has been using his personal wealth to found a campaign advertising blitz and rigorous campaign schedule in Iowa. Andrew Yang, an entrepreneur, I can never say that word.
Entrepreneur.
Entrepreneur. Very good, thank you, Judy. From California, has carved out a unique niche in the race with proposals like a universal basic income, a taxpayer-funded $1,000 per month stipend for every U.S. adult. Well, Cory Booker, a U.S. senator from New Jersey, continues to struggle to gain traction in the polls. And, you know, I can't figure that out. But anyway, he's at a 1.7% in Real Clear Politics average, despite being received warmly and enthusiastically at almost every Iowa event he holds. Judy?
Texas Tenors returning to Mason City. The Texas Tenors are bringing two holiday shows to Mason City. The Texas Tenors, Deep in the Heart of Christmas, sponsored by the G.G. George family and the Historic Park Inn, will perform at 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. on Thursday, December 19th at the North Iowa Community Auditorium, 500 College Drive, as part of North Iowa Area Community College's 2019-2020 Performing Arts and Leadership Series. The Texas Tenors consist of Marcus Collins, John Hagen, and J.C. Fisher, who use their breathtaking vocals, humor, and a touch of cowboy charm to create an unforgettable Christmas show. The group, which appeared on America's Got Talent in 2009, is celebrating 10 years together. Since appearing on the show, the Texas Tenors has released 4 studio albums, 2 PBS specials, 4 DVDs, multiple singles, and a children's book. The group has earned 3 Emmy Awards, the Gillette Burgess Award for Excellence in Children's Literature, and the distinction of being Billboard Magazine's 2017 No. 10 Classical Crossover Artist in the World. The group was among the top 50 acts in the world and the only vocal group from the U.S. invited to compete on NBC's primetime series, America's Got Talent, The Champions, earlier this year. The Texas Tenors has performed more than 1,300 concerts around the world, including headline shows in Las Vegas, China, and a 24-city tour of the United Kingdom. The group performs 3 live concerts, Rise, Live on Tour, Let Freedom Sing, and Deep in the Heart of Christmas, that appeal to all ages. More information about the Texas Tenors is available at www.texastenors.com. Tickets for the 4 p.m. show are still available and can be purchased by calling the NIAC box office at 1-888-466-4222, extension 4188, or by visiting www.niac.edu/boxoffice. Tickets to the 7 p.m. performance are already sold out.
Yes, Judy, it's about close to 8:30, so we're going to read the obituaries. Dale Leo Wessels, Jerry Kester, Florence Helen Fontes Larson, Jean Imrod, Harold Vest Weber, Alice Charlson, Sharon Lynch, Ruth Fosnaugh, Marilyn Schaefer, Joseph Joe Kramer, and I think there's one on the back.
Just flip your paper.
Oh, on the other side?
Yep.
Oh, yes. Jerry D. Wubin, Ruth Ann Schaefer, and Alex Frederick Blake. We'll start with Jerry D. Wubin, born February 14th, 1939, passed away December 8th, 2019. Jerry D. Wubin, 80, of Clear Lake, went to his heavenly home on Sunday, December the 8th, while at Mercy One North Iowa Medical Center in Mason City. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, December the 12th. At Clear Lake United Methodist Church in Clear Lake with Reverend David Peterson officiated. Burial will be at the Memorial Park Cemetery in Mason City with military honors provided by the Clear Lake VFW Post Honor Guard. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 Wednesday, December the 11th at Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel. Jerry was born February 14th, 1939, the son of Cy and Marjorie Campbell Wubin in Mason City. He grew up and attended Mason City High School, graduated in 1957. He also led the Mason City Mohawk baseball team to a state championship in 1956 and was later offered to play for the Kansas City Royals. Jerry met Eleanor Taylor while she was attending LeJames College of Beauty in Mason City. They were married on December 30th, 1960, and would have celebrated 59 years together this December. To their union, four children were born, Mary, Andy, Dale, and Paul. Jerry was drafted into the United States Army on December 4th, 1961, and was honorably discharged on December 3rd, 1963. He and Eleanor spent most of their time in Fort Riley, Kansas. In 1964, they moved to Clear Lake to raise their family. Jerry worked for Libby Owens Ford for most of his career and retired in 1992. He loved country and gospel music and was an avid Iowa Hawkeye fan. He also enjoyed following the Chicago Cubs, Chicago Bears, and Clear Lake Lions, the Garner Hayfield Ventura Cardinals, and the Mason City Mohawks. Jerry's love for baseball led him to play and coach fast pitch softball for Tortoiseville Boats, and Pabst Blue Ribbon. He also coached slow pitch for E&J team he and Eleanor sponsored. Jerry survived by his wife Eleanor and children. He was preceded in death by his parents, a sister Phyllis, brothers Cy Jr., Dickie and Jackie, daughter-in-law, Sue Wubin, grandson, Christopher, and nephew Craig Shell Smith. Ward Van Slyke is in charge of his arrangements.
Ruth Ann Schaefer, 79, of Mason City, passed away Saturday, December 7th, 2019, at Mercy One North Iowa Hospice in Mason City. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, December 11th, 2019, at the Sietsma Vogel Funeral Home in Hampton. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home on Wednesday. Burial will take place at the Hillside Cemetery in Sheffield. Sietsma Vogel Funeral Homes of Hampton are in charge of the arrangements.
Alex Frederick Blake from Stacyville passed away at the age of 98. On Thursday, December 5th, a funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, December the 14th at Visitation Catholic Church in Stacyville with Father Raymond Burkle officiating. Visitation will be from 3 o'clock to 7 at Visitation Catholic Church. Burial will take place at Visitation Cemetery. Schroeder and Seitz Funeral Home, St. Ansgar, is in charge.
Dale Leo Wessels, 77, passed away on Saturday, December 7, 2019, at Mercy One North Iowa Hospice in Mason City, surrounded by loved ones. A memorial service will be held at 1:30 p.m. Saturday, December 21st, 2019, at First Congregational Church, 923 Buddy Holly Place, Clear Lake. Reverend Harlan Seary officiating. Dale's family will be greeting guests at the church 1 hour prior to the service. Dale was born June 24, 1942, the son of Norma Garner and Bruno Wessels in Austinville, Iowa. He was raised on the family farm along with seven siblings. Dale attended country school at Norton's Corners before graduating from Shell Rock High School. Following graduation, he enrolled at the University of Northern Iowa, where he met and married Meredith Jane Goddard. Together, they were blessed with two sons, Christopher, born April 28, 1966, and Carrie Garner, born August 16, 1968. The family lived in Cedar Falls and Madison, Wisconsin, before settling in California. In 1979, they returned to Iowa, farming for 10 years while their children attended school. In 1990, following Chris's graduation from the University of Northern Iowa, Dale, Meredith, and Carrie returned to California. While Carrie was earning his degree in mechanical engineering, Dale and Meredith went into business. In 2005, the couple retired and moved to Clear Lake to be near Chris and his family. Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel is in charge of arrangements.
Jean Emrod, born December the 10th, 1966, passed away December the 4th, 2019. A time for gathering and sharing memories for Jean Emrod of Crystal Lake, Iowa, will be held from 2 to 4 p.m. Saturday, December the 14th at Bonnerup Funeral Service. Albert Lee. Jean died suddenly on Wednesday, December the 4th, at Mercy One in Mason City. Jean was born on December 10th, 1966, in Anoka County, Minnesota. He was lovingly and adopted by parents Curtis and Beverly Jacobs Emrod. He graduated from Freeborn High School, Freeborn, Minnesota, and continued his education at Waldorf College in Forest City, and he lived his life in Northern Iowa, taking residence in Garner, Britt, and mostly recently Crystal Lake. Jean worked for Winnebago Industries and then for 14 years at Integrated Marketing Technologies as a robotics specialist before retiring. In retirement, he was finally able to pursue his passion, which was working with bees, and his hobby became a business, Bee Kind Apiary. Jean had many interests and had great artistic ability. He enjoyed renovating, woodworking, and was currently working on writing a book. Jean was also an entrepreneur. I couldn't say that word. And devised many money-making business plans. He was a researcher. He researched and documented the Emrod family tree, tracing our ancestry back to Norway. He will be remembered as being very loyal and hardworking. Jean is survived by two sisters, Lynn Emrod and Valerie Jim Hoffman, both of Albert Lee, nieces and nephews. And also surviving his special canine friend, Malaki. And of course, he was preceded in death by his parents and a brother, Glenn.
Okay, Judy. Sharon L. Lynch, age 80, a longtime resident of Osage, died Sunday, December 8th, 2019, at the Mitchell County Health Center in Osage. Private family graveside services will be held. Champion Bukite is assisting the family. A funeral service for Jerry Kester will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday, December 11th, 2019, at Zion Lutheran Church in Rake, with Reverend Doug Roki officiating. Burial will be held at the West Lutheran Cemetery in Rake. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, December 10th, at Oakcrest Funeral Services, Winter Chapel in Buffalo Center. Jerry was born to Howard Levi and Wilda Leona Clement Kester on October 13, 1954, in Hancock County. He grew up in Forest City, later moving to Lake Mills after his father passed away. He graduated from Lake Mills High School in 1973 and went on to NIAC in Mason City. He enjoyed farming with his stepfather, Lawrence, and his late father-in-law, Robert Knudsen, and he helped his son-in-law at Rognus Brothers excavating before going to work for Asmus Farm Supply and H&H Farms. Jerry was united in marriage to Sherry Winter Mayland on August 19, 2017, at the Zion Lutheran Church in Rake. Jerry enjoyed telling stories, being outside, taking care of his garden, driving his John Deere lawnmower, and horseback riding. He was a very handy man and always carried his John Deere pliers with him. Jerry loved his time with his grandchildren and was very proud of his family. His goal in life was to make others smile. He was a very genuine man and was one that would talk to anyone. Jerry died Saturday, December 7th, 2019, at his home in Buffalo Center. He was 65.
Harold Vestweber, 81, of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, passed away on December the 5th with Unity Point Hospice. Harold, the son of Court and Francis Tyler Vestweber, was born on June 14, 1938, in Iowa City. Harold graduated from Alexander High School and then went on to attend Hamilton Business College in NIAC in Mesa City. He worked for the REC, R-E-C, in Hampton as the office manager. He enjoyed serving as a sergeant first class in the National Guard, where he retired after 34 years with the Mesa City 1133rd Transportation Unit. Harold is survived by his former wife, Carol, and their two daughters. Harold is preceded in death by an infant daughter, Kathleen, his parents, and his twin brother, Gerald. A private family graveside service will be held in the Hampton Cemetery, and online condolences may be directed to the family at www.iowacremation.com under obituaries. Ruth A. Fosnaugh from Clemmy, 96, but most recently of Washington, died Saturday, December the 7th at Skagit Valley Hospital, Mount Vernon, Washington. Funeral arrangements are being completed with Andrew's Funeral Home in Clemmy, Iowa.
Clear Lake. Florence Helen Fontes Larson, 87, of Clear Lake, Iowa, passed away on Saturday, December 7th, 2019. Funeral services will be held Tuesday, December 10th at 10:30 a.m. at Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, 101 North 4th Street, Clear Lake, with visitation 1 hour before. Lunch will follow after cemetery interment. Flo was born on January 6, 1932, and to John and Cynthia Fontes. She was a proud of her Greek heritage and loved sharing a bit of Greek culture with friends and family through her delicious cooking. On December 18, 1948, she married Robert C. Larson Sr., and the couple settled in Clear Lake. She was a loving wife and a wonderful mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, and aunt. Flo loved children, and she could create fun with the most basic supplies, such as a button and twisted piece of string. She loved playing cards, marbles, and other games, and never cheated, unless her opponent wasn't paying attention. Flo enjoyed crafting, gardening, and the company of her family, friends, pets, and a large number of birds and squirrels that frequented her backyard feeders. She had a deep appreciation of nature and enjoyed life's simple pleasures. Please direct memorials to Hospice of North Iowa or to the family in care of Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel. Ward Van Slyke is assisting the family.
Alice G. Charlson, Hanlontown. She was 103. Passed away on Sunday, December the 8th, at the Manly Specialty Care Center in Manly, surrounded by her loving family. A funeral will be held at 11 o'clock a.m. Friday, December the 13th, at Bethany Lutheran Church in Kinsett, with Reverend Tom Martin officiating. Burial will be in Winnebago Lutheran Cemetery, that is in rural Lake Mills, Iowa. Visitation and public viewing will be 1 hour before the funeral at the church. Connor Colonial Chapel is in charge. Marilyn J. Schaefer, Osage, age 80, died Saturday, December the 7th, at the Faith Lutheran Home in Osage. Funeral services will be held at 1 o'clock Thursday, December the 12th, at the Champion Buchite Funeral Home in Osage, with Pastor Sue Thomas officiating. Burial will be at the Osage Cemetery. Visitation is from 12 o'clock to 1, Thursday, at the Champion Buchite Funeral Home. So that's right before the funeral. Champion Buchite Funeral Home is in charge.
Joseph Joe Kramer, 35, most recently of Spirit Lake, Iowa, a longtime Belmond, Iowa resident, died Saturday, December 7th, 2019, at Spirit Lake, Iowa. Funeral service will be Friday, December 13th, 2019, at 2 p.m. at the Belmond United Methodist Church, 1031 First Street Southeast, Belmond. Visitation will be from 12:30 to 2 p.m. at the church on Friday. Andrew's Funeral Home of Belmond is assisting the family.
Judy, I'm going to be on the sports page now.
Okay.
And the title is Iowa Players Focusing on the Holiday Bowl. Future is now for NFL hopefuls Espinosa, Werfs, and Stone. This is from Iowa City. Already two practices into bowl preparations, several Iowa football players are currently concentrating on short-term objectives and will wait to think about long-term goals. The Hawkeyes accepted an invitation Sunday to play in the Holiday Bowl facing Southern California in the December 27th game at the South Dakota Stadium in San Diego. I don't know what SDCCU must be, San Diego something.
Community College
or something. The appearance will be Iowa's fourth in the Holiday Bowl, but its first since playing BYU to a 13-13 tie in 1991. It's a match up against a Pacific 12 team that has the attention of Hawkeye players, including several who are contemplating the Football League, National Football League. Let's see. B2. Turn to B2, okay? Leaving early to enter the NFL draft, but expect to be on the field for the 7 p.m. matchup against the Trojans. To me, it doesn't seem right to walk away right now and bail on my teammates like that, offensive tackle Tristan Werf said. Werf's defensive end, A.J. Espinosa, and safety Geno Stone said Sunday they have filed paperwork with the NFL Draft Advisory Board, seeking input on where they might be selected if they opted to forgo their final year of eligibility and enter the draft. All three said they have not reached a decision about their future beyond knowing that they'll be on the practice field this week as Iowa works toward its 17th bowl appearance in the last 19 years. It's an earlier bowl, so the turnaround is shorter, and the game will be here before we know it, Espinosa said. There will be time to think about all that later. I'll see how I grade out, what kind of feedback I get. Right now, there is another game to get ready to play. That tops Stone's priorities as well. I'm not going to think much about it until after the bowl, Stone said. We're still working to try to get to 10 wins this season. That's where my thoughts are. Tristan Wirfs named last week as the Big Ten offensive lineman of the year and said this year's team has been focused on that objective for a month now. Our season isn't over yet, and I'm committed to putting everything I have into it. I think we all are, Wirfs said. The next step, I really have no idea right now. I'm anxious to go to California and to play a good team. When you think of teams with great traditions, USC is always on that list. Senior Nate Stanley, who has quarterbacked Iowa to bowl wins over Boston College, Mississippi State, the past 2 years, welcomes the Holiday Bowl assignment for another season. We haven't played against a Pac-12 school since I've been here, so I'm looking forward to that, Stanley said. It will be another good challenge for us, a good test. Like Iowa, USC enters the game on a 3-game win streak. The Trojans have a win over Utah as well as losses to BYU, Washington, Notre Dame, and Oregon on their 8-4 resume. Iowa defensive coordinator Phil Parker, filling in for Coach Kirk Ferentz at the Sunday's news conference to allow the Hawkeye coach to watch his son James play in an NFL game for New England, said the shorter than usual turnaround has created a sense of urgency as Iowa begins bowl preparations. I didn't know James played for New England. That's great. Wonderful. Okay, Judy.
It's been an awesome run in this building. On Saturday night, in the North Iowa Bulls final game at North Iowa Ice Arena, the fans and players had an experience none of them is likely to forget anytime soon. With less than a minute left in the game and the Bulls leading visiting Alexandria by an 8-3 score, it looked like the Barn would end its junior hockey history with a crowd-pleasing win. But the events of the final minute took the game to another level. With 47 seconds left in the game, a brawl broke out in the northwest corner of the ice. As the referees grappled to try to keep the warring factions apart, North Iowa goalie Evan Babcool skated over, dropped his gloves, and challenged Alexandria goalie Bill Heatonen to a bout of their own. After a few quick punches, Heatonen lost his balance and fell to the ice.
Oh, dear.
Babcool skated away and waved his arms to the adoring crowd, which shook the metal rafters with its loud shouts of approval. The moment provided a memorable ending to a dominant game for the Bulls and put a stamp on the near 40-year history of junior hockey in the building. In the 782nd and final junior hockey game at the Barn, the fans went home happy. Bulls head coach Todd Sandin echoed what many people in the crowd felt when he talked about his feelings after the game. Sandin has been playing and coaching hockey in Upper Midwest for many years and has plenty of good memories of the Bulls' now former home. We're excited and sad, Sandin said. It's been an awesome run in this building. The Barn is known around the league as an especially loud place to play and is a place that opposing teams never seemed excited to play in. As the building echoed with the crowd's excited shouting after the game, Sandin seemed wistful. It's so electric here every night, Sandin said. Whether it's 1,000, 1,500 people, or 500, they come here, they cheer their butts off, and make a lot of noise. It's the funnest place I've ever been to play in.
And the arena seemed nearly packed to capacity as fans came to say goodbye. Through 36 years and three junior hockey teams calling the place home, Mason City hockey supporters have always packed the stands. Denise Williams is a billet mom for the Bulls and host goalie Joel Daniger. and forward Dalton Saltis at her home. Williams has been attending Bulls games for 6 seasons and has seen plenty of players cycle through the program. Before the game on Saturday, Williams said that she is ready for the new Mays City Multipurpose Arena to open, but the fans do have one big concern. "It's kind of surreal," Williams said. "It's almost sad, but it's exciting to be going into a bigger, better equipped arena. I think everyone is concerned on if it's going to be as loud, because this arena is loud." Roberta Studer works the register for the Bulls at the team's store and has been working with the Bulls for 4 years. Unfortunately for Studer, she will no longer have a view of the ice from the new team store, but she is excited nonetheless to see how the new arena will impact the Bulls program. "It's hard to see the old memories end here, but I think everyone is excited to make new memories," Studer said. "It'll definitely be an upgrade in establishment." For the players, even those who haven't been with the program very long, the barn is a place that is hard to leave. Forward Justin Daly scored a hat trick in Saturday game to help the Bulls to the 8-3 win. Even though Daly has only been a Bull for a short time, it meant a lot to him to help send the arena out on a high note. "I've never played in an arena like this," Daly said. "It was crazy. Loudest fan base I've ever had. It's definitely a special place. We're going to miss it like crazy, but we're on a bigger and better things." The Bulls will play their home opener at Mays City Multipurpose Arena against Alexandria on December 28th this year.
One more story. Operation Christmas Meal giving away pork in Mason City. Operation Christmas Meal, a free pork loin giveaway for families across Iowa who aren't planning a Christmas meal due to financial circumstances, has already begun. The Deb and Jeff Hansen Foundation and Iowa Select Farms have announced that that upcoming event locations include Mason City and Osage. This year, Operation Christmas Meal will be giving away 18,000 boneless pork loin roasts at 14 different events across Iowa. Operation Christmas Meal kicked off Friday at the Iowa State Fairgrounds, and it will end on December 19th in Osage at the Mitchell County Fairgrounds, taking place from 4 to 6 p.m. The Mason City event will take place the same day as Osage from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other locations within that time frame will include Webster City, Eldora, Parkersburg, Lenox, Osceola, Humiston, Iowa Falls, Carroll, Storm Lake, Pocahontas, and Hampton. Now in its 9th year, Operation Christmas Meal has provided more than 820,000 Christmas meals to Iowa families. The event has become a holiday tradition for the Deb and Jeff Hansen Foundation, with hundreds of Iowa Select Farm employees volunteering to hand out pork loins year after year. During an especially difficult time for families in need, Operation Christmas Meal helps create a happy holiday for all Iowans, no matter their circumstances or level of income, said Jen Sorensen, Communications Director of Iowa Select Farms. The event is free and open to anyone in need. A new component of Operation Christmas Meal is aimed at increasing awareness of local hunger and helping even more families during the holiday season. The Deb and Jeff Hansen Foundation and Iowa Select Farms is awarding cases of pork loins and $250 in cash to FFA, 4-H, and school-based organizations throughout the local areas of each regional Operation Christmas Meal. And that brings us to the end of the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Tuesday, December 10th. Your readers have been Mary Jane and Judy. This broadcast has come to you through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of IRIS or KCMR. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for today's reading of the Des Moines Register. You're listening to IRIS, your 24-hour radio reading service. Have a great day.